everything you can think that could go wrong on a lot of these places from an instrument standpoint is going wrong. And that's not from a human side element. That's from the lack of infrastructure, the lack of education, lack of resources to properly maintain a surgical instrument. For instance, you're going to see a lot of mineral deposit buildup. You're going to see a lot of rust, staining from just bad water supply and bad processes. You see a lot of missing instruments, a lot of broken instruments, missing screws, missing springs, a lot of bowel burden. So that's kind of like one of the biggest challenges we face when we go to a hospital or a region.
In the midst of constant commotion in the healthcare industry, one unified voice rises above the rest, a beacon bent on banishing biofilm. They are sterile processing professionals who clean and sterilize their way to improved outcomes, and their patient safety victories often go unseen. This is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we give voice to that global force, fighting dirty all around the world. It's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Keith Miles, Executive Director at Safe Surgery Initiative, a nonprofit organization providing on-site surgical instrument repair to hospitals in developing countries. He has over 12 years of experience refurbishing surgical instruments for the largest surgical device repair company in the country. SSI began after the company's founder witnessed firsthand the unsafe condition of surgical tools being used on patients while volunteering overseas. It was a transformative experience that created the company's mission to provide safe surgical instrumentation to low and middle income countries. Mr. Miles has his BA in international studies from the University of Alabama in Birmingham. Hank, this one's going to be a good one. There's only so many of these types of interviews that we get to do, and I'm glad that you keep scouring the internet to find people like Keith to have them come on and talk about the great work that they're doing.
Like a moth to a flame, Justin, I'm drawn to passion. And it has not taken me long to find the folks out there who are trying to make a difference. And I am beyond excited to talk to Keith today. In particular, there's a quote that comes to mind by Michael Dell who says, if you're the smartest guy in the room, you're in the wrong room. Well, I also feel like this is a great example of someone who is the bravest guy in the room and perhaps maybe the most visionary to see something like this, to see the need and to not look around for someone else to do it, but to go do it. I'm ready to hear this story.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit onetray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Keith Miles, Executive Director at Safe Surgery Initiative. And this is a very rare topic that we have an opportunity to speak on, Keith. And I just love the fact that you're not only serving a community, but you're serving the world, and definitely an area of need across the globe in terms of safe surgical instruments to be used in low and middle income countries. So welcome to the show, and thanks for the good work.
Hey, thank you. Glad to be here.
Why don't we start with how Safe Surgery Initiative began? What got it all started?
So we originally started back in 2008, and it kind of formed organically. I was working for a surgical instrument repair company, and we would get these inquiries from a lot of surgeons about being able to repair their surgical equipment when they go to do mission trips, surgical mission trips. And from that, we kind of just slowly started to research and kind of figure out what the skill was, what were the interests, what were the needs and concerns of these surgeons that were going on these surgical missions. From that, we kind of just started to see, oh, there's a great need for this, because a lot of people don't realize that outside of high-income countries, there's no provision for surgical instrument repair and maintenance in most of the world. So when these surgeons go out to do these missions, a lot of times the equipment is malfunctioning, it's not sharpened, it's damaged. So just from that beginning, we started to see the need, and then we try to figure out how we could address those needs.
And now, Keith, when you say we, is this an army of one? Do you have a team behind you? What does that look like when y'all go out into the field?
Okay, so when I say we, in the beginning, it was me and my older brother who actually originally founded the organization. And we worked together in the surgical instrument repair field for quite a number of years. And so that's how we started this whole Safe Surgery Initiative. And we originally partnered with an organization called Instruments of Mercy, and they did a similar thing for Mercy Ships, this floating hospital that goes around the coast of Africa and provides free surgery for an extended amount of time in different countries. So that's how we kind of started doing this process, and that's how we got exposed to the needs of the low to middle income country hospitals at large.
Awesome. Yeah, that Mercy Ship interview, actually, we did about a year and a half ago now. We interviewed a technician who had served on the Mercy Ships and then also one of their recruiters. And and yeah, they're doing terrific work. But it makes total sense that an organization like yours would be partnered with theirs, obviously, for the same reasons that they have their ministry, because you're going to similar places. I wonder if you can kind of set the tone. I know when the audience, you know, hears the mission of your organization, you know, certain things will come to mind. But I'm wondering if you could kind of describe the challenges that you see when you go out in country, in the field to do your projects. Like, what does it look like when you show up at the hospital or at the facility?
Frankly, and I'll try to be as frank as I can on a podcast, it looks like a SPD or a thorough processing technician worst nightmare. Everything you can think that could go wrong on a lot of these places from an instrument standpoint is going wrong. And that's not from a human side element. It's just from the lack of infrastructure, the lack of education, lack of resources to properly maintain a surgical instrument. So, for instance, you're going to see a lot of mineral deposit buildup. You're going to see a lot of rust, staining from just bad water supply and bad processes. You see a lot of missing instruments, a lot of broken instruments, missing screws, missing springs, a lot of bowel burden. So that's kind of like one of the biggest challenges we face when we go to a hospital or a region is, first, before we even start doing the first repair, we do an assessment on the sterile processing department or the CSSD or the the CS department. We all know the acronym. So that's a big challenge. And before we can do a first repair, we do those assessments and see where we can improve, where we can feasibly improve the process and the workflow of reprocessing those surgical instruments. Because no matter what we do, the great job that the technicians can do in repairing instruments, that if that process is flawed, if that process is causing unnecessary damage to that instrumentation, then the work that we're going to, the benefits of repairing it pretty much goes out the window within a couple of weeks or a couple reprocesses. So we try to focus on that first and then go from there.
You know, Keith, you mentioned missing screws and broken or missing springs. And one of my favorite is seeing a Wheatliner and a Gelpie with that very small spring missing below the screw. It's still held together. It seems like it's ratcheting, but you know that it's just ready to present an enormous nightmare in the middle of the case. Same thing goes with larger instruments too. And then you always wonder, where did the other half of that spring go? But you mentioned something about being not having the infrastructure, but you also said something about not having the education. I can imagine with the instruments in this condition, how much time do you have to educate, and is that part of your mission?
Yeah, so the education is a big part of it. We do develop several workbook exercises for us, care and handling, inspection of a surgical instrument, ways for the staff to be able to identify that missing spring on that Waylander, or recognize that there's a missing screw in this pituitary run jewel. So that in-services are tailored for a technician. They're tailored to work in the process of them assembling trades. Same way we look at the instruments over and over again, I can zero in on where the problem is going to form. Obviously, springs are more likely to crack just because of the tension being applied to it. So we make sure that they're looking at those areas. So we spend quite a bit of time educating the staff. And there's no way to do it properly unless we invest that time in the education of the local technician.
I don't know if there are any larger advocates for clinical education in this space than our team. We just love education and support it any chance that we get. And I guess in this context, like Justin said, you know, that's got to be a large part of your job. And I'm wondering, as you said, these departments are sometimes a technician's worst nightmare. Is it the same, I'm assuming, for clinical education and just training opportunities that's available to these teams? Like, do you see a real lack of that, I guess?
Yes. So as far as education, but I guess the first thing, just to set the tone, most of these technicians, okay, there's two situations that we normally face when we're in the field in regards to technicians. The first one is that no one has any official certification or training. It's this kind of thing they've been doing for years and years. Someone, maybe a technician came in from the U.S. or from Europe, showed them some things, and they just kind of built upon that over the years. And they're working with very outdated autoclaves and doing a lot of manual washing. So so that's one perspective, one part of the problem. The second part that we notice is that there's not a dedicated CS technician at the facility. So it's kind of a lot of task sharing where the scrub tech is doing some of the work, or, you know, another nurse is doing some of the work, and they kind of work together to piece together a SVD department that can process the equipment or the equipment and instruments in a timely manner. So that's normally what we're facing. So a big part of probably we'd like to move forward is really locking in the education, the proper training, the certifications to back it up, the continued education to back it up, and really, really, really bring a focus to how important processing is in global surgery, which is kind of the field space that we work in.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here thinking about the U.S. context, and I've seen some challenging contexts out there and some troubled departments, but I find it interesting that your solutions are the same solutions that these departments need wherever you are. You have to have the investment, you have to have the equipment, you need the training, and if you are missing any one of those pieces, as you said, whatever solution is offered, it's not sustainable. And I think it's I don't want to get us off topic, you know, but instrument repair in the U.S., absent what you're talking about with the assessment and with the clinical education part, I think that's really it's missing the mark. And I'm glad to hear that in your model in global surgery, like that's such a critical piece of it. And obviously, like it is so by necessity, but even in the US where we have the equipment oftentimes, even if it's not as much as we'd like, and even though we have tremendous access to clinical education, I still run into a large number of professionals who have increased needs. They need more education. They want more education. And and many times these experts who are repairing the instrumentation, they have the insight. They've seen these things a million times, and they know the cause. They know the solution. And yet there can be that barrier there. So on these projects, then, how are you received by the clinical staff in the operating room? Are you seen as a resource? Are you seen as an outsider trying to come in and change their processes? What is that dynamic?
You know what? That's probably one of the most rewarding aspects of this field and working in these communities and these regions, is because every single hospital we've been to, every single organization that we partner with to provide these services, it's been nothing but open arms and welcome. I mean, they know they need it. It's not a situation where we're coming in and we're saying, okay, this person is the cause of all your problems. The space is a little bit different, or the headspace of the people in these locations is a little bit different. They know they're working with the bare minimums. They know they're trying to do the best that they can. So they're hungry. They're like sponges for any education that you can offer them. Any insights to improve the process, they've been all for it. Even from the administrative staff, whatever they can physically or financially afford to invest in their organization, once they know, okay, this is a proven tack to improve your processes, we've gotten little kickback from that. So just in general, yeah, we've had a great experience dealing with SVD technicians, the clinical staff, all the way up to the surgeons. I mean, I get surgeons emails all the time saying, thank you for repairing my instruments. Like, now it works now. You know, when I go to use a tenotomy scissor, you know, it's cutting properly, it's dissecting properly, you know, run jurors abiding, you know, needle holders aren't slipping anymore. So all in all, we've had a great experience working with all of these different clinical staff and technicians and administrators across the world.
And really extending the life of that inventory, right? So it's not just a matter of, hey, now it's working, which is huge, but now it's going to work. If you sustain the models of improvement that you put in place, it could work, you know, for many months or years to come.
Exactly.
So let's talk logistics here. I'm assuming, right, that you're not putting a repair van onto a big boat and sailing it across the ocean and unloading it on the coast, right? There's something else involved in this travel. So walk through a little bit about what this lab looks like on site.
Okay, so basically what we found to be the best option, that made the most sense logistically, is to ship all of the equipment, bring all the equipment with us, with the technician, as they fly to these different countries. So that involves packing, you know, 4 or 5 to 6 boxes of equipment and take it to the country directly. We've tried shipping on boats and a lot of different things, and it brings up more and more custom issues, more than we already face on a regular basis. So that's how we transport the equipment to the country. And once we get on site, we find a space. The hospital normally finds a space for us. Normally it's working with, if they have a biomedical department, we'll normally take up a little bit of their space temporarily, and we'll set up the lab, and that includes all of the stuff that you would normally see in a van model. So you're going to have your grinders, you're going to have your ultrasonic tank, you're going to have your magnifiers, all of your hand tools. We found that we tried different models over the years, and the model we use now has been the one that's been the best sustainable version, because you a lot of time you think, well, I can just buy this once I get there. I can just get this on site. And we found that at some places, sometimes you can get it, but for the most part, everything that we need, we normally bring with us, all the way down to the nuts and bolts, just to make sure that we have everything to go once we get once we land at a facility.
Well, I can only imagine you've got a whole ton of stories just from the travel and all the miscues along the way. I just know, from having done a lot of travel myself, it never goes the way you want it to. No. And But I do want to hear other stories. I want to hear examples of what you've done on a lot of these missions, and maybe we'll go a little bit more on the sentimental side versus the side of, you know, things not going right and sort of being calamity on travel. Let's talk about how you've really changed some lives out there, and maybe some of the more touching and impactful missions you've been on.
Okay. I got a few that come to mind. One of the biggest ones that always sticks with me, you know, going through all those other unavoidable hiccups with logistics, is I was in Cambodia at this hospital or the surgery center called Children's Surgery Center in Phnom Penh. So just to kind of caveat how things work when we're able to do a good job and able to get into these places, is most of these hospitals, they have people coming in from, you know, hundreds of miles away. And the problem is that, you know, you go in for surgery, you think you're going to get surgery that day. You have all these financial expenditures to get there. And if you don't get surgery on that day, it's a good chance you'll leave and you'll never make that trip back to the hospital. So by doing our job and doing it well, we're able to increase the amount of surgeries that a hospital or a surgery center can do in any specific day. So, you know, instead of 6 cases or 9 cases, maybe you're up to 8. So that's one more person who's going to stay and get surgery and not run the risk of leaving that hospital. From a number standpoint of impact on what we do, that's kind of the thing that I always think about. But on a personal level, I'm at this hospital in Cambodia, and this mother's in the children's ward. And I don't spend a lot of time in the wards. I spend most of the time just working in my lab and just kind of getting the nuts and bolts. But every now and then, I feel like I need to get out of there and just make contact with the people that I'm here to try to help. And on one of these occasions, this mother's in there, her daughter, I saw this lady a few days prior, and the daughter was there, obviously distressed. There was a lot of damage to her hand due to a bug bite. It just kind of festered and just got really bad. So she needed surgery. I walked by and I saw her, and she was talking to one of the aides there, and she was talking about how, like, she doesn't know if she can stay any longer, you know, all this type of stuff. And I went into the OR room and I was like, hey, what are the cases looking like for today? Is there anything I can do to help out? And from a repair side, there was nothing I could do. You know, the cases are the cases. But from the processing side, there was something I could do. I could actually get into the CSSD department and start processing these instruments a lot quicker. And then basically that's what I did. So later on that day, this lady, the child did end up having surgery. And I saw them in post-op the following day, and just a smile on this lady's face just literally melted my heart. And it was just one of the, you know, it was just an honest to God, just mother's happiness that her child's going to be safe. Like, you know, she had so much stress and tension on her face, understandably, prior to that. But just to see that level of relief was just amazing. And actually, we talked for quite a bit, and she allowed me to take some pictures, and that's one of the pictures that's actually on our website. So, so I see it all the time, and it's one of those things you just kind of take with you as you're going through this work and doing this process.
Wow, yeah, that's huge. I mean, really, to be able to see the impact in person like that, and we see that in our industry all the time. There's a lot of disconnect because we're, like, so physically disconnected oftentimes, like multiple floors away from the patients, never get to see those kinds of interactions that you described. And that's why there's a lot of advocacy, again, in the U.S. context, for part of our training in sterile processing to involve the viewing of the surgery. So we actually get to see the patients and see how these instruments are being used and see the impacts of instruments that are incomplete or are non-functional, you know, to tie this in. And yeah, like, obviously, like, you get to see the positive impact of your work, but then that also means prior to your team, you know, coming on site, there are those patients who have to go home. That's a powerful story that it's that one patient, you know, like, that could be the difference in a surgery they have or one that they never have. And yeah. That's powerful. Along the lines of just kind of opening eyes into the context that you serve, I wanted to talk about maybe some myths or misconceptions. And we can go either way with this. So maybe some assumptions on the part of the technicians at these locations for how sterilization works or instrument processing. I know you said oftentimes they'll have international folks will come in and show the process and then leave, and that process kind of takes on a life of its own. What are some surprising things that you've seen in the field, maybe for how the processes have been implemented on site, and or maybe some things outside, you know, back in the West that we have assumptions about how things work overseas that are not necessarily true once you get it in the trenches and actually see it for yourself?
So I guess, like, from misconception, I really don't see a lot of misconceptions. I just see a lot of bad processes or incomplete processes being done. I guess one of the biggest misconceptions we probably do come across is the fact that most of these places don't even realize that they can actually repair the surgical instrument. Most of them just use it and then it's broken, keep using it, and then finally when it's completely unusable, throw it away and then try to buy a new instrument. And then I guess I'm going to have to eat some of my words up, but the other big misconception is that all instruments are created equal. And we advise from an administrative standpoint of making sure we don't advocate for any particular brand or anything like that, but we do ask that any surgical instruments bought need to be purchased either from the U.S., Europe, or Japan, just because of the quality of the work, the quality of the instrument, the quality of the ore or the stainless steel that they're using to make the instrument is where it needs to be to make sure that you're going to be improving patient safety by doing the surgery versus harming it by using inferior products that don't sterilize properly, are prone to break doing surgery. So we advocate really, really hard on that. It's a big sticking point that we have to deal with, but that's really, I guess, the biggest misconception that we come across.
I would think one of the misconceptions would be that people overseas don't care about sterility, right? They're just, you know, send it through the machines and let it go. I mean, in low and middle class, or that they don't even sterilize equipment because they don't have the equipment. Those are the types of misconceptions that occur to me immediately is, yeah, they just wash it in the sink and take it right back in, that kind of a thing.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's true. So, yeah, I guess I can be here to dispel those misconceptions. They absolutely care about sterilization. And every hospital that I've worked in has protocols for sterilization. I mean, they may not have the best equipment. They may be drastically understaffed. But they do care extremely about the work being done, and they understand the impact that they're going to have on patient safety if they're not processing these instruments.
Well, lots of work to do, and I'll tell you, I think it's important for us to help champion your mission and see if we can't recruit some others to get involved. So at the very least, from the smallest of ways to the largest of ways, how can our listeners help your mission?
One of the things, this kind of goes to the misconception, just a quick understanding of how global surgery is and where the place is at this point in time. So global surgery basically involves advocating for the neglected surgical patient. People don't realize that surgery until recently, until 2015, wasn't a part of any universal healthcare coverage. And a lot of these hospitals are all moving towards some form of universal healthcare coverage. So until recently, into the WHO World Health Assembly in 2015 said that surgery was an integral part of universal healthcare, there wasn't a lot of traction on actually improving global surgery. So from that standpoint, from that beginning, people started to look at, okay, well, people, organizations as a whole started looking at how can we improve surgery in these low to middle income countries? And how can we get away from this mission model where, you know, surgeons from Europe, surgeons from the U.S. or from these developed countries come in, they spend a week or two doing surgeries, and they leave and go home, which is great. They're definitely filling the need. But everyone now is looking towards more capacity building, healthcare strengthening. So now the focus has been how can we improve that? And if you're gonna be there for the long haul, if you're gonna be investing in years or months of training, then you need to have the infrastructure to back it up. So with the focus being on global surgery, focus being on infrastructure, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of more technicians in the process and sterile processing, CSSD technicians involved in that global surgery movement. We've been personally championing a lot of initiatives to add that to the program. So that's a big part of where your listeners could come in. And I say that because I'll give a quick anecdote. I was at this hospital in Kenya, and unfortunately, the lady who ran the SPD department was in an accident. So she couldn't work for her. She was out for the entire week, almost 2 weeks. Within a day, that entire hospital was shut down because she was the only one who knew how to process those instruments. Now, this lady is probably one of the lowest paid, least technically educated persons at the hospital, but she's so integral into doing a job that the hospital is there to do by providing safe surgery that after 2 days, the hospital was completely shut down. They couldn't do any more surgeries. Luckily, I had a technician there at the time who stepped in and actually ran that department so they could keep doing the work that they needed to do to do these cases and process these instruments. So I'm saying to say this, that there's a lot of focus on surgeons when we talk about improving surgical outcomes. Biggest takeaway, I mean, I've stressed this over and over again in a lot of places, at a lot of assemblies, a lot of conferences, is that surgeons play a vital role in providing the surgery. Obviously, they're doing the surgery. But if you're talking about safe surgery, you talk about improving surgery, all of the work to really do that has been done before the surgeon walks into the OR room. So sterile processing technicians, those are the people who are actually making surgery safe. The scrub techs are double checking, making sure that those instruments are functioning properly. By the time it gets to the surgeon, his job is to do the surgery, not to check screens and, you know, make sure needle holders are gonna hold it. He's expecting all that stuff to be done before he gets there. So there's a lot of talk about we're gonna bring 5 new surgeons into Uganda over the next 5 years, and that's gonna improve surgery. It's gonna do all this stuff. And I always tell them, I can bring 5 sterile processing technicians, and they can improve surgery tomorrow. You know, so it's like the role that sterile processing technicians can play in global surgery is huge. I mean, the need is astronomical, and we're definitely looking at ways that we can help facilitate those people who want to go out and help spend the time in these countries and do the training and do the education and really, really try to improve and save lives with the skill sets that we all have.
Yeah, Keith, that's fantastic. And I'll wrap on this and just say as we close that I really like the fact that you create jobs too. When you go there and you train technicians to stay and continue performing that repair service in your wake, you're putting somebody into a position, an employment position that literally didn't exist. It's not that you're bringing somebody in and they're filling a vacant one. You're creating opportunity. And I think from a high level, that's really important, especially when you're talking about bolstering the economy in a low to middle income country.
Yeah, thank you. And we're basically building the industry as we go just by exposing these hospitals to this new way, well, not necessarily a new way, but another way of thinking about instrument maintenance and repair. So having the opportunity to train technicians is definitely a big part of what we're doing, but it's also our long-term strategy. It's to be able to just train technicians, move them, local technicians, train them, provide the necessary resources for them to be able to do their job, grow that industry to help facilitate it. We've also been doing this hybrid training program where we are training technicians to do basic level repairs, but they're also the main sterile processing technicians. So when they're not doing repairs, they're doing a normal job. And so as stuff starts to break down, they're able to easily fix it on a regular basis and still be able to maintain a fully functioning job at the hospital. So that's kind of been our motto, to kind of bridge that gap to a fully functioning surgical instrument device apparatus in those countries.
Excellent, Keith. Well, keep up the good work. It's really been a pleasure to have you on the show today. You're really doing something very unique, and I'm sure that it really is very intrinsically rewarding as well.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Thank you.
That was Keith Miles, Executive Director at Safe Surgery Initiative. And this is another unique one, Hank, a lot like Mercy Ships. I know we mentioned that during the interview, but a good cause, easy one to get behind. And certainly we're trying to do our part by getting more people involved and getting them out there to really serve these low to middle income countries.
That's right, Justin. And I get asked all the time, why did we start Beyond Clean? What was the purpose behind it? Well, This is a great example of the purpose of this platform is to give the stories and the passion out there in the world, just like Keith and just like his organization, a platform to share the story and hopefully through that encourage action. And even if it's not get involved with what he's doing, but get inspired to do your own thing, like see the need and make the change. That's what this is all about. So I am super excited we finally got him on the show. And if you're interested, I found Keith on Instagram. So you can track him down through the Instagram pages and we'll post the link on the show notes so you can find him very easily. But definitely follow this guy, get involved in your own passion and hopefully get inspired by his.
Yeah, it'd be great to share his pictures and anything he's got up there. And I'll also say we've seen a lot more activity with submitting anonymous pictures through Instagram or through the email, which is fantastic. And we'll definitely share that on the Instagram account and on the social media accounts as well. The last thing I'll say about Keith, I just want to reiterate what a great deal of benefit it is to these countries where he's creating jobs. I just think that is so unique. It may be a secondary impact for the services that he's providing, but I really think it may have a tremendous impact on giving somebody a vocation. And I just think that that's so important. And jobs are sparse in low to middle income countries. It's so huge. But that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.